Hi, this is Diane, and it is Wednesday, January 24th. I'm here with a 3 o'clock group. We have 5 folks so far, but we're going to start with check-ins and celebrations. Who wants to get us started?
So this is Maria.
Maria,
I am checking in, celebrating my first time on these calls. So I just finished the sessions, and I can't remember what the name of them.
You just finished Sanity School, and you're starting.
Yeah,
here.
I just finished Sanity School. I'm sorry. It's been quite the morning already here, but yeah, we finished Sanity School, and I am just joining. So feeling success there.
Yeah. Well, congratulations on finishing, and I gave you something. I'm like not starting you off on the right foot being late today. So I appreciate your patience with us, and this group is glad to have you with us. Who else?
Okay, true confession. I'm Sue, and I am finishing up Sanity School, but I haven't finished it yet. But I signed up for a parent success system, and this is my first call-in. I actually don't know what I'm doing.
Okay, well, that's cool. There's two new people. I appreciate your candor. And how far have you gotten in Sanity School?
I have done 1 through 3, Module 3. So, and I've listened to Module 3 twice, and I think that may be why I'm a little behind. But I kind of jumped at the chance to join the Parent Success System because I would really like to put it all the pieces together in my mind, how it all works, so to really make full use of it in my house.
Well, we're happy to have you, and I think that, you know, part of the way that Parent Success System works is to kind of really integrate and go back through some of the stuff that we covered in Sanity School. And so what I'll suggest for both you and for Maria is kind of like, and everybody else, it's like, let's go back and look at module whatever or whatever, you know, and so we'll do some of that in this conversation, but we will dig in and roll up our sleeves on a few things, and I would encourage you to do what you can to finish the other 3 modules at your own pace, and it'll help you to kind of keep things moving and keep things going. There's also an orientation recording that talks about kind of PSS and how the format is and everything else, but you'll learn that a little bit as we go through today, how we handle the format. So, we're glad to have you with us, too. Sarah?
Yes, hi. I'm celebrating a better week this week, communicating with my son and less meltdown, and fingers crossed that I get home because I have a flat tire, so I'm celebrating that hopefully get home.
Okay. Julia?
Yes, hi. I am celebrating that 2 weeks ago on a call with you, Diane, I decided to come up with a plan on having my 2 fourth graders who are 9 and 10 and my husband, everybody picks up after themselves, and I held a family meeting at a very calm time and suggested a plan, and everybody agreed to it, and it hasn't been implemented perfectly, but it's, for my mind, it's been good enough, so that is a really big deal, so I'm very thankful.
It is, there's so much in that about setting yourself up for success, Julia, because you really did, you know, you put it in place at a time, you set a calm time, right? So you got buy-in, you were able to kind of, get everybody in, and I know that you worked hard to kind of find a solution that would work for everybody, and you're saying it's not perfect, but that's okay. I mean, sometimes it's just about the baby steps, right?
Yes, but it was a big, it was more than baby steps. It was awesome.
That's so cool. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Pat, what about you?
This is Pat, and I've got a 10-year-old son. I guess for celebration, we're back into the high gear for school. After the break, they crank it up higher. And so far, We do have a lot of homework, but we hadn't had any meltdowns. We hadn't had any, you know, huge issue. He just goes as hard as he can, and then last night he just looked at me and said, "I'm going to bed." And I was like, "Okay." So, I mean, there's, you know, there's a point where their brain is mush, and you just say, "Okay, we've done what we can do." And so, and we got back up this morning, and we actually got some work done on a paper. So far, so good.
Well, and I know that that's, I mean, I think that feels like progress, even Pat, you know, it's like I've known you for a while, and there was a time where, you know, when he hit the wall, you might have, you know, it might have been tempting to kind of take him past that wall, but I think it's huge to be able to just say, you know what, he's done, and I'm going to honor that and let him go to sleep, and I think that's cool.
Yep.
All right. So, Pat, if you don't mind starting, so I'm just going to, so on these calls, because two of you haven't been on a PSS call before, once we do check-ins and celebrations, we actually, each of us decide where we're going to take aim as a group. And so that before I do the teaching for today, I'd like you each to kind of identify an area where you want to take aim. And I can help you figure that out or narrow it down or broaden it out. If you're not sure where to take aim, I'm happy to do some laser coaching and talk you through that. But just a reminder that when we take aim, we want to take aim on a challenge or a change we want to see rather than necessarily a solution. It can be something with yourself. It can be something with your kiddo. But we want to start with, okay, where do I want to be? What do I want to be most thinking about in this conversation today? And it doesn't necessarily have to be related to taking it personally, but that is what we're talking about today. And so it might be helpful for you to kind of think about an area where you tend to take it personally or a particular challenge that comes up as you think about taking it personally. So, Pat, can you start us off by kind of saying where you want to take aim today?
Okay. I think what I would like to take aim on is getting my son. He used to do his homework in one place, and now I guess because he's a little older, he's like, you know, I can do it in the basement or I can do it here. I think we need to go back to the, he needs to do it in one place where he can be monitored better because he unfortunately gets distracted.
So, yeah, so let's start for a second. So, Pat, roll me back. So the challenge you're trying to address is how to manage his distractions during homework, right?
Right.
Are you comfortable staying there as the place to take aim rather than jumping to the idea of doing homework in one place? Because it may be that you come back and say, yeah, I want to do homework in one place. But if we stay with the challenge, it may be that you can look at it in a different angle through our conversation today and come back with even a different solution or a stronger solution. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, that's fine.
Okay, so distractions during homework.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Perfect. Julia, where do you want to take aim?
I think where I need to take aim is what it means. I hear myself either saying out loud or to myself, like, "Don't you're being disrespectful," and I think I need to. This is kind of vague still. I think I need to reframe that or rethink that.
So and it sounds like you want to take aim. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Well, it looks different for both my kids.
Yeah, yeah. So it's okay. Like there's some trigger that's happening that's causing you to kind of flash that word disrespect. So it's kind of like how are you responding or reacting when you see something that feels disrespectful? Is that a good way
mm-hmm.
to summarize it?
Yep. Okay. Yep. Yep.
Uh-huh. Sarah.
Yes. Along the same lines, my biggest issue as a whole is how to manage and stopping the meltdowns and the destructive behavior, which seems to go from a 0 to 10 when something doesn't go his way. And I think we did a pretty good job this week, but I don't know what to do after. So I'll give you just a quick example. He'll say he wants to play the Xbox Unlimited, and I'll say, I'm sorry, but, you know, we have rules set in place that you can play for X amount of time. And if he goes off and starts cursing, you know, I'll say, I'm sorry, you can't speak like that to anybody, and I'll walk away. But then afterwards, I don't know, like, the old me wants him to acknowledge what he did and apologize before we continue. And the new me is saying, all right, maybe we should just drop it because he's calmed down now and talk about it later. So I'm not really sure how to handle the after the fact.
Well, so I guess I'm not sure. Is it about the meltdowns or is it about the disrespectful communication that happens during meltdowns?
Oh, yeah, it's right. It's the disrespectful. It's the yelling, cursing, throwing thing. It's not so much. Well, I guess that is the meltdown, but yeah, I would love for him to handle it differently.
That's the place to start. Is how frequently does he use disrespectful communication at a time that he's not triggered?
When he's not triggered, it's not. It would be disrespectful if my other children are saying it, but I kind of have different standards for him. You know, like I would never let my other children, you know, say shut up to one another or to me, and they would know not to. But for him, the shut up part I'll kind of let slide because there's been way worse things that he said. I don't know if that answers, if does that help clarify?
It kind of does, and I think that it's fine. I guess the question is how clear are you on where you're taking aim? Because there's a little bit of the disrespect, there's a little bit of the meltdowns that kind of merge together, and I think as we're talking about not taking it personally, I think that there's some different angles we'll take that I think will be helpful. Fair, remind me how old your kiddo is?
He's 12.
12, okay, great. So do you feel solid enough as that is a place to take aim?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Maria, do you get a sense of kind of what we mean by taking aim? It sounds like you've been through all the modules, and I want to see if you're ready to figure out where you want to take aim today.
Yeah, I do, and it's actually it's quite timely because we've been having some trouble at home. So my son, I have two sons, one with ADHD, he is 6, and my other is your typical 3-year-old. And so my son, who is 6, he tends to ignore me when I talk to him. And so it triggers me. And, in turn, I yell and then it becomes a big battle between he and I. And so even before this call today, I was thinking, gosh, I need to figure out how to get him to respond to me when I'm talking to him. And whether that's changing my behavior or getting something in him triggered. That's kind of where my aim will be.
Okay, I like that. And I think that you might end up going two directions. You might end up going how to not get triggered when that happens so that you can then problem solve, or it may be focusing on the problem solving in order to avoid the trigger. And so I don't know you well enough to know which direction to point you, but so I want you to think about those two things. Is one is how do I avoid getting triggered, and then how do I help him in a place that I'm not triggered. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Which of those feels like the place to really start for you?
For me, I think it's the not getting triggered myself.
Okay.
Because backstory, I guess. We have a really busy life, and as does everybody. And so I work full time. I pick them up by the end of the night. I'm exhausted, and I tend to get triggered fairly easily. And I know that about myself. And there are moments where when I focus on that, things are great. We don't have battles at night. Things go smoothly. And so I feel like I'm back into the area where I'm triggered. And so my focus, you know, more on how do I not get myself worked up, so that I can help him work through what he needs to.
Yeah, no, and that makes sense. And you're in really good company. And I know I'm kind of knowing up with the people on this call, but it's, you know, it's easy to get there, particularly at the end of the day when you're exhausted. And I think that some of the conversations today will directly relate into that. So how do you feel about where you're taking aim? Does it feel like a right place?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, cool. Sue, do you have a sense of taking aim enough to take a stab at it?
I was trying to review my past week with Jonas and just to see, is there anything that stands out that I'd like to work on? It's not so much, although sometimes I do tell him this is a trigger, so let's not talk about it because it's a trigger for me, so I know I'm not going to respond well to you, no matter how how you intend it not to trigger me. It just is. But I think what I'm struggling with most of all right now, when it says don't take it personally, I'm good with knowing my triggers to Jonas and our own personal interaction. What I'm at a loss right now is when he has a bad day at school, especially on the recess. He's very confused because there are differing things happening all at once. How to help him process it. Does that make sense?
So where you want to take aim is on what to do when he has a bad day at school.
Yes.
Right?
That is exactly, yes. I wasn't sure if that... I'd say that. So,
no, I think
that's
great.
Exactly.
I think it's narrow enough, and I think as a first time, I think as we get into this, you might look and say, yeah, I think that that's a great place to start too. So it gives you a framework.
Okay.
Awesome. Okay, so we are talking about not taking it personally, and I'm on page 38 of the workbook. And it sounds like a few of you at least have kind of had a chance to read through this. And I think that this is a topic for me personally that is a very important one because I'm one of those people that tends to take a lot of things personally, whether it's in my relationship with my kids or in my personal relationships or in my work relationships. And part of that is just I'm like responsibility mom, right? So it's like I've gone through a period of my life where I felt like, oh, my gosh, I had to take care of everything and be in charge of everything because – no one else could quite do it either the same way that I did or the right way or whatever kind of the mindset is. And what ends up happening is that there's kind of two pieces to this. Is one is like we take it personally, meaning like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe they're doing this to me or how dare they, and we tend to get triggered. And so that's often if we get triggered by something, it might be a good indication that we're taking something personally. And then the other piece of this is that there may be this sense of guilt and shame and embarrassment. It's like, oh, my gosh, if I got this kid who can't sit still and finish their homework, it must be because I'm not a good enough mom or I'm not doing a good job helping them or whatever it else. And so we kind of have both of those two flavors here. But the bottom line is that when we're looking at a situation with our child and we're taking it personally, it totally takes the focus off of our kiddo. And if we're getting triggered, our ability to really problem solve completely changes. And we talk a lot about that in the trigger module in Sanity School. We talk about that, you know, in a lot of the workshops and things that we do on triggers. But when you're triggered, the part of your brain that goes, oh, gee, what should I be doing right now to help my child, just really isn't engaged. So if you're taking it personally and you're noticing that you're triggered, the first and most important thing is to go back and say, okay, how do I unwind myself from this trigger? And if that's a big issue for some of you, we can talk a little bit more about that in this conversation. But then once you're kind of in that place of untriggered, then the trick is to turn the light we're shining light on me. It's like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe he's doing this to me, or I can't believe this is happening, or it's like this sort of I'm taking it personally thing. There's a spotlight shining on us and our reaction, whether it's guilt or frustration or whatever it is. We want to take that spotlight and shine it back on our kid. And say, what's going on right now? What is it that my kid needs in this moment? So if you've got a kid who's speaking disrespectfully, if you can shift it to, wow, my kid is having a really difficult time showing respect, and that unwinds me from the trigger. So it's like if I don't have a bad kid, I just have a kid who's having a hard time, and shine the light back on my kid and say, wow, my kid's having a hard time showing respect right now. What do they most need in this moment? Are they feeling overwhelmed? Are they feeling triggered? Are they feeling frustrated? Are they feeling confused? Are they, you know, what is it that they need? Because oftentimes, a lot of you gave this example of disrespect. A lot of times that disrespectful communication, I would say almost all the time that disrespectful communication comes from a place of triggered. So the key is not to say, wow, you shouldn't be speaking disrespectfully. The key should be, how triggered is my kid right now, and what was their trigger, and how can I help them to calm down and unwind from the trigger so that we can then get back to the work at hand? So, again, if we're taking it personally, we want to get to a place where we can respond rather than reacting, because a lot of times when we take it personally, we're reacting, and we're assuming that our kids are in complete control of their behavior and that they're just doing it on purpose, and we want to shift from that and say, wow, my kid's having a really hard time. What do they need right now? So what thoughts come up from all of you as I share that brief lesson?
This is Pat, and I will just say, because I've heard this before, but it sounds logical and good, but I still, when your child speaks disrespectful to you, and it's a trigger, it's really hard.
Yeah.
Count to 10 and turn around and walk off, and then if you have a husband or other children that are watching, and, you know, it's really hard.
It is. So how do you get to the point where if you know, so the conversation we were having on Wednesday in this group, or Tuesday in this group, was that, you know, when somebody's triggered, and I don't know about you, but when I get triggered, there are times that I say things that I just don't mean or don't know, or I'm not even aware that I'm saying them. And it's, and I kind of joke about the fact that someone who's triggered is kind of like somebody who's really, really drunk. And I don't know if you've ever been, I'm remembering back to my 20s and being out with my girlfriends, and like if a girlfriend got really, really drunk and she would say something that was just completely crazy and silly, and it's like, no, you don't mean that, and when I ask you about this tomorrow, you're not going to remember, and it's okay, and so I'm going to give you grace, because right now you're just not in your right head. And someone who's triggered, even our kid, is really kind of in that same place, and so we all tend to say things we don't mean when we get triggered. And it's pretty normal, but when we hear them and we're standing on the other end of them and somebody calls us a booty head or whatever the disrespectful tone is that our kids use, maybe worse than that, it's easy to go, they did that on purpose and they can't do that to me because I won't allow it, right? And that's where my trigger comes in. But if I was standing there with someone who was really drunk, I would be like, oh, my God, they're totally being, I can't believe they just said that. That's really pretty funny that they said that. Which shifts the energy. So I guess, Pat, for you, how do you get to the place where you can see that he's not necessarily, even if he's, and this is the trick to it, right? Because our kids will say, well, I mean it. And they'll look at you with a straight face, and then part of them does mean it. But most of them is just triggered. So how do you unwind from that, Pat?
Well, I mean, it's hard. I guess for me, I have to do something or say something to my son and walk away, you know. So it's like I've got to tell myself, okay, or to just look, okay, you're not in your right mind right now. I need to walk away. I'll come back. Because, you know, otherwise I'm just, you know, you're going to start fighting with them and it's hopeless after that.
Yeah. Well, I like the whole idea of walking away. I remember very distinctly getting to a point where it's like I could tell that my kids weren't in their right mind. And so I started to kind of, I would like laugh to myself and go, wow, this is really funny. And the minute you laugh, then it triggers them more. And then it's really a hot mess. So you got to just be really aware of what does your child need to unwind from the trigger. So, Pat, when you walk away, does that give your son space to calm down? Because I've had other clients whose kid will follow them if they try to walk away.
If it's not a heated argument, it's just, I don't know, exchange about homework, I can probably walk away and go in another room and he'll, you know, I might hear something get thrown around, but it's pretty short-lived and he'll get over it. It's only when it's something really, really huge does he actually need to go to his room.
Well, and I think that that's the piece of it. So you've got to figure out how to calm yourself down and help your child calm down. And where a lot of the conflict ends up is if your need is different than theirs, right? So it's like I've got to stay adult enough to stay in the conversation. If my kid really needs my help to calm down, if I walk away and it's going to trigger them more if I walk away, that's going to create even more and more intense dynamic. So what's coming up for the rest of you around this topic?
This is Julia, because I have, because I was thinking about this too. So I think for my son, he definitely has like, we call them temper tantrums when, you know, fill in the blank, you know, you're not allowed to do the tablet today because whatever. And then he'll say, you know, he'll just kind of explode verbally. And, you know, with him, I'm, you know, it's for all the swear words that he actually has heard on the bus, he never uses them. So I'm very thankful. But it's fat mommy, it's this, that. And, you know, it's like he has a significant language disorder. So I'm all in my better days. I'm like, say, I'm disappointed, you know, give him the words. Because, of course, he's disappointed, you know, he's angry, he's disappointed. In my not so good moments, I walk away. When you were talking earlier, Diane, my daughter is almost 10, and I feel like she's becoming like a tween already. She's neurotypical. And she didn't used to be disrespectful at all. And I'm like, oh, no, I got two of them now. And I think it's part, I don't know. I mean, this is all new to me, but, you know, it must be part independence. You know, I want to do what I want to do. And I've always assumed, and we've talked about it a little bit, there's sometimes things feel very unfair because things, they're in the same grade and they're 8 months apart and she has more responsibilities and she does. And that's the way it is because he has a disability and it's like, you know, things aren't the same. And, you know, it's not always fun to have a brother. And she's right.
Well, and so how you're showing the feeling compassion. And it sounds like you have a clear picture of what's going on for her. So what do you think she most needs? Take it the next step.
I'm not always, I hadn't really thought it through this much, but probably the you know, empathy, you know, and you know, if she wants to be more independent, then how do you want to do that? Sure. you know, within the realm of what's possible, what would that look like?
Yeah. So just having that conversation and honoring the request, finding some way to honor the request. And I like how you're asking the question.
It's not a request at the time, but it's, you know,
yeah.
I'm assuming, I don't know for sure, but I'm assuming that that's partly what it is, given sort of her age and her, I don't know, just where she's at.
Well, and I think that's the piece of it is that one of the things that when we ask what is going on with our kid, I always encourage everybody to come up with three things that might be going on, because particularly if something triggers us, the first thing we list is probably going to be the one that sits inside the trigger. So, you know, he doesn't like what I'm telling him how to do. You know, he doesn't like it or she doesn't like it. You know, it might be the first thing, but there might be something else going on besides that. There might be self-doubt. There might be overwhelm. There might be, you know, all of these things might be going on in addition to that, particularly when you've got a snarky kid. You know, I was listening to somebody earlier, a few minutes ago, talking about taking something away and saying, no, you can't do that. A lot of times transition management is a really big issue for kids. So it's like if they got their mind set on, I'm going to play this game tonight, and then all of a sudden something happens and we remind them that there was a consequence and they can't play the game,
right,
it's going to obviously be disappointed because they've forgotten that they can't play the game. And so it's this suddenly, it's like it's happening fresh again. You know, it's that sort of thing. And so really kind of looking at, and with this example is a little bit less charged because it's your daughter, Julia, but it's kind of really saying, what are all the things that might be going on for her? And then asking, what do I think she really needs? And I love the engagement and the asking her questions. I think that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Other thoughts?
So this is Maria. And so my son used to be very aggressive, and fits were throwing things, kicking things, spitting, yelling, screaming. Fits were really bad. And we've been able to manage those down now where it's just verbal yelling or verbal name calling and that sort of thing. And going through sanity school, one of the things that I took away from this, don't take it personally, was like, yep, whatever you want to call me, it's not going to affect me. And I would walk away. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. But there's times that he'll say, you're a mean mom if I take something away or don't let him do something. And that used to trigger me. And still sometimes it does, but it used to make me really angry. You can't call me names. You can't. And it would turn into this bigger battle. Now sometimes, and I laugh because it just sounds silly, but sometimes I go, yep, I am mean, and I'll turn around and I'll walk away. And most of the time he'll continue to say things, but realize that it's not getting anywhere. And then he will just resolve it on his own or stop. Other times it becomes bigger, where he'll lash out at his brother and that sort of thing, that I have to take different actions. But most of the time, if I walk away, it tends to be easier than trying to address what he's saying. And then once we've calmed down, we can address why he's upset about or why he was lashing out over, either getting something taken away or not being able to do something. So that was a big thing for me. And I'm not always great at it, but it was just kind of a big thing for me to be like, yep, you go ahead. It's not going to affect me.
So Maria, what do you think is the difference between those moments where it pushes you over the edge versus the moments when you're able to say, you know what, this isn't about me?
It really could be anything. It could be, where I'm at, physically or mentally or emotionally, personal-wise. And then other times it's just really taking that effort to know, think about the things that I've learned through sanity school or think about the things that have worked in the past for us, and really implement those in the at the time.
Yeah. So is it about awareness? Is it about giving yourself grace when you don't make it? What do you think you most need?
I think a little bit of all of that, but mostly being more aware of in the moment and how to respond, and really thinking about, hey, these are the things that have worked in the past, and trying that route before trying the things that are not thinking about and just reacting rather.
Yeah, like that. Sarah or Sue, anything to chime in and add?
Along the same line, this is Sarah, a big wake-up call for us was one day when we sat down with Lucas and said, why do you speak so mean to us, yet you don't do it to others, at school or to your grandmother, because I'm sure everyone gets your man at once. And he usually never answers, and we don't get much. And he said, because I like to see that you get so angry, and I can see that, it bothers you, and that's what I want to do at that time is because I'm angry. So that was like a big light bulb moment for me and my husband. So now we just walk away, and, we just say, you don't have the right to speak to us like that, or we won't listen. We just walk away or whatever, even if he's destroying the living room, that used to enrage me. And now I just let it be. I let him do what he needs to. And it's actually better because he doesn't destroy it as much. And he cleans it up before I even have to say anything. Because I guess, it gives him a time to calm down.
Here's what I would say is that a lot of times, and I'm not necessarily doubting what your kid has said to you, but a lot of times our kids say what they think they want us to hear, or they speak from a trigger, right? And so I think a lot of times our kids don't know why they do things, but because they don't know, it's, I don't know doesn't feel like a good answer, right? And part of it might be, I'm angry and I want other people to feel angry too, or I'm angry and I don't know what to do about it, and so I'm just going to lash out because I have all this anger inside of me and I need to do something. I mean, so there's all of these pieces to it. I love the first step of not engaging. I think the second piece of it is, what do you do to help him if he's having a hard time getting with a trigger, kind of taking it that next step? Can you stay calm enough and stay present enough And I don't know, does that feel like a good challenge for you, Farah, or does that feel like, ooh, that's pretty hard?
It depends on the situation. It depends on the day. It depends on how triggered he is. You know, it depends on if he can, after we walk away, if he can calm down. I usually give him a time. I'll say, you know what, I'm getting triggered. I need to go walk away, and you do as well. I'm not ignoring you, because that used to trigger him just by walking away, because he would feel like he was ignored. I say, I'm not ignoring you. This is both of our chances to kind of regroup and come back and meet. So that helps. But it depends on how angry he is or what the situation is, really.
Well, the thing that just popped into my head, I have two nephews, actually, with seizure disorder. And, you know, it's like, I can't imagine leaving them alone when they had a seizure, even if it was really upsetting to me. And I think it's that same sort of thing. It's like if our kid gets triggered and it's really upsetting to us, or it's we've been triggered too, it's that sort of how do we, what can we do to help our kids and manage ourselves through the situation at the same time?
Right. I'm not very good at calming him down at all. I guess my husband or I, neither one of us, he just, at least that's what we think, seems to just manage to do it on his own. Nothing that we have tried in the past seems to calm him down, whether it's words or, you know, whatever it may be.
So how often, Farah, when you think about situation where he's triggered, right, and so then you look at your trigger level in that same situation. So my kid's at a 5 on the trigger scale. You know, how often are you at a 1 and when he's triggered versus when you're triggered, or do you always tend to get triggered when he's triggered?
No, it depends. It depends on the day. Really, it depends on the mood that I'm in. I usually tend to be a 1 in general, so I don't get triggered very easily. But it tends to be when he doesn't stop or I can't escape it, or like if it's at night and he really needs to go to bed and it's past his bedtime and now he's bothering his brothers and now he's up out of his bed, you know, bothering them and, you know, and he's doing everything he can to set us off. And it's probably after like the, you know, the 8th, 9th, 10th, thing that he does, I'm like, all right, you know, that's when I'll go from a 1 to a 10. And that's never good, and it never goes as planned. But that's the only time where I feel like I can't leave or I can't escape is when he's going to bed, because I guess he needs to go to bed. And my husband's like, well, just leave him then. Just, you know, go down to the basement and I'll do my thing and he'll go to bed when he's ready. And that was a hard thing for me to do, because, and I know if he doesn't go to bed, then it escalates. The next day, he's in a terrible mood. You know, bedtime was always a thing, because we found that that's something we can control to help him, you know, manage his next day.
I'm going to take us back to not taking it personally in just a minute, but Farah, the thing that I want to ask is that there's two types of triggered. There's triggered where we're actively engaged, and I think about myself, it's like I'm triggered when I'm like actually yelling or angry because I'm a yeller, right? And then there's those moments where I'm calm, but I'm not real calm, I'm fake calm, because I really am upset inside, but I'm not going to raise my voice. I'm going to kind of keep it cool. And those are the moments that I tend to need to escape. And what you're describing, and I want to check on this, is you know, I'm going to just go away and leave him alone, is a coping mechanism that says, I can't handle this, so I'm getting out of here, which is actually triggered, but it's not yelling triggered. It's the flight versus fight. Does that make any sense at all?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So the question is, if you were really not triggered, would you need to walk away, or could you just be there and be aware of the fact that he's having a hard time and be able to problem solve and say, wow, he's having a hard time calming down. What can I do to help right now? As opposed to, I got to get out of here because I can't deal with this.
Oh yeah, I see what you're saying. Usually I leave because that's the only way I know how to calm him down. It's not because I'm triggered, although sometimes it is, but for the majority part of it, I found that that's the only way to get him to stop. So it's not because I need the escape. Well, you know, of course there are those times where
yeah.
I'm like, this is not getting any better. Me being here is not any better. Let me go. So yes, I do it because that's the only thing that seems to calm him down.
That makes sense. So take me back to taking it personally. So how does taking it personally relate to this whole idea of when he loses it and he gets upset, and what's most important for you out of the taking it personally piece of it?
What do I take personally from it?
Are there times that you do tend to take it personally, or is it, have you gotten to the point
sure,
where you
sure.
don't, or what do you notice?
You know, yeah. I mean, there are certain words that I'll say that I'll take personally, or if he just is so disgusting with his mouth where I'm like, what? I don't even know where you heard these words from. I'll be like, how does someone even speak like that to their mom, to anybody, never mind their mom? I don't take the words per se personally, but I feel helpless at that time, and that's where, that's what I'll take personally, is like, oh my gosh, like, I don't know how I'm ever going to help this situation or help this kid with the mouth that, you know, that he has. You know,
so that's a really interesting spin, because what you're saying is that you go to this place of, wow, I should be able to fix this, and I can't, and I don't know what to do. And so that's kind of another sort of way of taking it personally. Like, it's like, oh my gosh, it's my responsibility to fix this, and maybe I can't. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so,
and I
so
can't.
In that,
and my husband. Yes, and my husband makes it worse. Like, he has ADHD too, so I tend to tell him, like, you know, let me handle it. But then, you know, so I feel, like you said, like, it's on me, and I feel helpless because I can't help him.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you for sharing that. That's helpful. Okay, so I want to get some parting thoughts, and then we're going to wrap up with the four questions at the end. So any thoughts before we kind of shift to the closing four questions? So I'm on page 39, and I want to just kind of take a minute and reflect on the conversation we had today. And the four questions we ask at the end of every call are, what did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity or takeaway? What aha did I have? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how do I set myself up for success with this action? So take a few minutes, jot down some notes, and I would love to hear from each of you at least one aha and one action commitment.
If I may go first, it's because I have to get off the call soon.
Sure.
This is Sarah again. I don't know, you probably tell from my terrible New York accent. That's like, I came on the call feeling kind of good, like, all right, like, if I walk away, I could kind of manage this. And now I'm kind of feeling like I don't know what an action would be, because that's the only thing I know how to do with him. But I'm kind of feeling like, I don't know. I don't have an answer to.
So Sarah, can I give you a challenge and a to-do?
Yeah.
Because he's 12, right? And so I think part of what we want to test when our kids are in that age group is kind of how self-aware we are. And so I'm going to challenge you to have a conversation with him when he's not triggered, about what he thinks might be helpful for him to help him calm down. Is that a fair challenge?
Yes, we have done it before, and things seem very well, you know, spoken about, discussed. We come up with a solution. You know, he usually says, I'm just going to walk away, or I'm going to see that I'm getting angry, and I'm going to, like, yell in the pillow, or make, you know, whatever it may have been, but it just never seems to follow through. And I said, so then the next time, I'm like, okay, but you know, if it happens again, we have to revisit this. But he always seems to come up with something, or like, but it never.
Well, and so that's a great aha, right? Because the reality is that may be a good idea, but he may not be able to do it on his own. So
right.
He may not have, so if he's got an executive function challenge of activation, right? So it's like, okay, I know that my tool when I get upset is to take a few deep breaths. So then the conversation becomes, okay, so I noticed that you want to try to take a few deep breaths. How do you want to try to remember? What can I, you know, if I say, let's take a deep breath, is that something that I can do, or is that going to trigger you more? Or what do you want to try? And make it more of a detective game than a be-all, end-all, right? Because with some of these situations, it's like you're going to try 7 different things before you find one that works sometimes.
Sure.
And so I think he's at a right age to kind of partner with him and kind of do some troubleshooting and some brainstorming about what he might want to try the next time, and then the next time, and then the next time. Is that fair?
Sure. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Awesome. Great. Who else?
This is Julia, and I really hadn't really given any thought to what might be triggering, actually, especially my daughter. My son, it's more straightforward. And the ahas on that were sort of the transition management. I'm already trying to give him the words, you know, I'm angry, I'm disappointed, whatever. But I think, you know, having a conversation with her about it, about, you know, what might go on with her in a calm moment, and that's coming right up. I'm in carpool line, and it's just her and me, and it's her lucky day.
Awesome. Good job.
Sweet moment.
All right. Enjoy it. Who else?
Hey, so this is Maria. So along the same lines of walking away when there's a situation, or there's, you know, diffusing it in that manner, I think when you said, you know, the next step in taking that beyond is helping them then manage their own triggers. And I think maybe I miss that part sometimes, where we actually go back and we talk about, hey, this is something that triggered you. What could you do better to not freak out or start calling names or have a fit or a tantrum? So I think me staying calm in those times and kind of going back and helping him get through it on his own, because maybe I'm done and I've walked away, but I haven't bothered to think about if he's ready to move on, or if he's ready to manage himself.
Yeah, and I think that one of that's a great aha and awareness, Maria. The thing I would say is that a lot of times we think our kids are untriggered, but they're not quite. And just mentioning the trigger to them throws them back into it. To just, you know, play with that a little bit and figure out, you know, how do you know when he really is completely calm? And what does that look like, or what does it sound like? Do you know when to engage? It may be the next day before they're ready to have a conversation about what happened yesterday, you know, that
yeah.
sort of thing.
Cool. That makes sense.
Awesome. Sue, what about you?
I was trying to think. For the taking it personally, it was when somebody had mentioned, wow, I should fix this and I can't. And I find myself feeling that a lot, especially when he has a bad day. Because I'm trying to help him think through this, and I feel this responsibility to help him figure out how to fix it so when I send him back to school the next day, he has a better day. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So I would love to say I have a realistic, I just wrote down just keep listening, because I think I can't say I'm 100% there. I love listening to everybody, but I think I'm still stuck on the I know this is not mine to fix, but I don't know how to help him be empowered to fix it in his own mind. Does that make sense?
It does. How old is he, Sue?
He's 9 going on 10. So
yeah.
When he has a day,
so the,
I try
the reality
to...
is that his, yeah, so it may be that he really needs you to do more than you think he does.
Okay.
You know, it's like I've got an 18-year-old who's away from home who sometimes calls me to help him calm down.
Okay.
You know, so part of it is just raising awareness and doing things consciously with him. So if he's upset, you know, doing things like we talk about the calm box and some of those other things in that module 2 of Sanity School. And if triggers are an issue, go back to that module 2. And there's a great webinar we did on triggers as well that I can point you to if you're interested. But just to kind of look at, okay, how do I help? Once I'm staying calm, what can I do to help them? Is a great question to ask. And maybe you just kind of brainstorm and try 5 or 6 different things, like I was saying earlier, and see which one feels more solid. Does that make sense?
Yes. I think, I'm sorry, I wish I was more prepared for this conference call. I really do. I'm really sorry. I just...
Well, this is your first one, and so you're playing around here. So I'm going to be curious about, you know, once you kind of process what we talked about today, maybe even go back and listen to the recording, you'll jump in and, you know, be gentle with yourself and know that, you know, something in here will trigger you to kind of say, okay, I want to try this next week. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Pat, have you checked out yet? I don't think you have.
No, I haven't. So I think what I'm hearing that I just need to be reminded on in triggers is, or basically, you know, keeping my thoughts to myself and just walking away when my son, you know, has something smart to say or wants to argue, and then come back later when he's moved on, because he moves on fairly quickly to something else. And so this week I'm gonna work on his homework distractions and then, you know, try not to get him triggered or myself triggered in this process.
Love that. Cool. All right. Any parting thoughts before we close off? Thank you again for the newbies, Sue and Maria. It was really nice to have you here. You know, don't worry about, you know, you'll get into this and you'll jump in. And if you need to go back and kind of get caught up in any school, don't, you know, take your time in doing that. But we're really glad that you're here. And just know that this is a learning environment. There's no right, there's no wrong. And we're just glad to have you here with us.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Okay, bye.
The moderator has left the conference. The conference is now completed. Goodbye.